Moneymakers, welcome back to another live edition of Taking Stock. I'm Khalila Reynolds, and we're bringing you all the latest business news and, of course, telling you how it will affect you and your money. Now, remember to hit the like button and subscribe to this channel. Shout out to all our viewers on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. Let me know in the comments where you're joining us from. Here's a look at what's coming up in tonight's show, followed by what's hot in business. And come on, let's get this money.
It's official. Robert Almeida is NCB Financial Group's new CEO. But who is the man now in charge of Jamaica's largest financial institution? And what new plans does he have for the company? Robert Almeida joins us live to discuss. And the analysts weigh in on the latest market developments. Remittances fell by $10 billion in 2023. What were the factors that contributed to this? We'll discuss. But first, here's What's Hot, brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. The Bank of Jamaica says it overestimated the impact that reduced JUTC bus fares would have on inflation. Following the increase in public passenger fares, the central bank advised that a reduction in JUTC fares would help offset the impact on inflation. However, in a statement last week, the BOJ accepted full accountability for its inaccurate estimation, which led Finance Minister Dr. Nigel Clark to announce a two-stage reduction in JUTC fares. BOJ Governor Richard Biles said the two-phase reduction is now anticipated to only offset annual inflation by 0.2%. The US-based Century Aluminum says it plans to double its investment in the bauxite and alumina plant at Jamalco this year. The company will reportedly pump an additional $15 million US into the plant's operations. Century Aluminum bought a 55% stake in Jamalco from the Noble Group last year. The company said the investment will go towards new equipment and day-to-day operations. The Bahamas, Belize, and the Turks and Caicos Islands were all removed from the European Union's blacklist last week. The EU blacklist is a list of countries that the Union considers non-cooperative for tax purposes and are tax havens. Anguilla, Antigua and Barbuda, and Trinidad and Tobago are still blacklisted. US-based chip manufacturer Nvidia last week broke the record for the largest single-day gain in US market history. The company's stock price jumped 16% on Thursday, adding $277 billion US to the company's value. This beat the previous record set earlier in the month by Facebook's parent company Meta. The surge follows the release of Nvidia's results, which showed a 265% increase in the company's revenues since last year. The company brought in $22 billion for its fourth quarter, which ended on January 28.
What's Hot was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart.
Listen up, if you're self-employed, you're legally required to file your taxes by March 15, so you have about a month to get it done. And if you've never filed your own taxes before, it can be very intimidating. You may even end up putting it off and hoping TAJ doesn't catch you. Don't do that. I got you. So I recently invited Courtney Johnson, taxpayer education specialist from Tax Administration Jamaica, to show us how to file online. Now, the good news is there are a lot of tax credits that you can benefit from to actually bring your taxes down.
For the wear and tear that the vehicle had for the year, we give you a little allowance for it. Say the vehicle value $2 million. 12.5% of that is
$250,
something like that. And then you can also claim in the first year another 12.5% for annual allowance. So in this case, it's 25% you're claiming, a quarter of the value of the vehicle, which is $500,000. Wow. So what it does is further reduce the amount of what we call statutory income that is subject to income tax. Be like Donald. Donald said, I'm smart. Why is he smart? He does a whole lot of smart stuff that reduces his statutory income for tax purposes. So he pays virtually no tax. Right, Donald? Right.
If you have employees, you get a tax credit. If you drive your personal vehicle, you get a tax credit. If you pay all of your statutory deductions on time, you get a tax credit. TAJ come in like Oprah. You get a tax credit. You get a tax credit. Everybody gets a tax credit. And Courtney gave us a whole list of tax credits and deductions that can help you out. But It is a lot of things to fill out, so don't leave it till the last minute. Check out this Money Mission webinar. It's about 2 hours long. You can follow along and create your TAJ online account and fill out your tax returns. You can watch it as many times as you need to get it right. It's under the Entrepreneurs tab in Money Mission, accessible with a basic or premium account. The link is in the description. Let's get this money. Welcome back. Before I introduce tonight's guest, let me see who is joining us online. Who do we have and where are you from? We have Nana Sense from far, far away. Jermaine is all the way in China. Dwight is in the house. Humble is in the grill. Dr. Lithium is outside. Shout out to Natoya. Patricia is all the way in Bermuda. We have, who else we have here? Kingston checking in, saying, let's get this money. Natoya wants to know if anybody is bullish on NCB. Kish is telling everyone greetings. We have KB all the way in Grand Cayman. Javon shouting out the fellow 1%ers. I love that. That's how I should start calling you guys. Like, hi, good evening. Welcome to the 1%ers. Loving it, loving it, loving it. So it is official. Robert Almeida is NCB Financial Group's new CEO. But who's the man now in charge of one of Jamaica's largest financial institutions? And what plans does he have for the company? Joining me now, I'm pleased to introduce the man of the hour, Robert Almeida. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Kalila.
It is great to meet you. I almost said in person.
Almost in person.
Yeah. So I don't think we met in person. I might have seen you, but not really been introduced.
I think we did a little crisscross, but I don't think I've ever had the pleasure of actually meeting in person.
Yeah, something like that. I saw you at the AGM recently.
The AGM, yeah, a little crisscross.
Right. So tell me a bit about yourself.
A bit about myself. So
So where are you from originally?
My ancestry is Indian. I was born in the Middle East and moved around. My father worked for a British bank, and so moved around. Jamaicans would understand it. So you just get kind of that old Commonwealth British bank. And so my father worked for one of those, and we moved around, and then we emigrated to Canada in the 70s, just like a lot of other folks did, including a number of folks from the Caribbean. In that window of time.
What was it like growing up in Canada as an Indian immigrant, a Middle Eastern immigrant as well?
So the great story. This is how I get to NCB, because I landed at around in the same week. I think it was exactly in the same week. So I show up in this school. I'm the little immigrant kid, and I was actually quite small. The same week there was a Jamaican immigrant, and he was in school, came to the school at the same time. So the two of us were the two little immigrant kids.
By the way, do you mind saying who that was?
Sure. His name is Steve Lim. Yes, we are. So that's how I actually ended up connecting with Michael Lee Chin. It was through Steve. So Steve and I became the best of friends since grade 6. And we stayed best of friends for all of these years. And when Michael bought NCB, I had started a bank in Canada, or led the startup of a bank in Canada called President's Choice Financial. I used to work for a company called Loblaw and ran strategy. And Michael was actually one of the, behind Galen Weston, he was the largest shareholder in Loblaw. And so when Michael bought NCB, Steve heard Michael speak, and he got a message to him that that we should meet. And that was, around May of 2002.
Okay, so you skip past a few steps. I want to backtrack a bit, because you said, I started a bank, like if it's so easy to just start a bank. So how did you get started in finance? And tell us that journey that led up to you starting that bank.
So I'm a chartered accountant, by profession, CPA. And then I worked for what is Canada's largest retailer, Loblaw Companies. And I did a little bit of accounting at the beginning, a little bit of audit, but primarily ended up in strategy. And strategy range from logistics. So how do you move things around? How do you buy product, including cost reductions, just-in-time inventory, all of those types of things. But after getting the basics right, we were then looking at how to expand. And the expansion was around, we had 80% of Canadians used to walk into our stores. So the idea was, how do we expand? But we ran out of room in the store, if you will, because you can only add so many departments before the store is too big for people to walk around. And so we started to think about what could we add that was virtual. This is 1996. And the conclusion was banking was the service that we should add. And so did a little bit of research and negotiations and explorations, and ended up doing what was not officially a joint venture, but you could call it a joint venture with CIBC. And we started President's Choice Financial, and an electronic bank in 1998. And it did very well.
An electronic bank in 1998?
You got it,
ahead of your time.
So sometimes I'll look around and say, hey, that's exactly what we were doing in 1998. And
that's the thing. No, that's all the rage.
Yep. So we did 100% electronic bank in 1998.
How did you do that? Was it online? Did people have to call in and do their banking?
We had online. So online, ABM and telephone, not much different than today. We bridged the gap, and this is probably relevant. We bridged the gap with the grocery stores because that's where everybody walked in, right? And so they were all in the store. It made our cost of customer acquisition easier. It also meant that we could get customers active right away. So if they joined our bank, they got a debit card right away. They could use their debit card at the grocery store for that first purchase immediately. And if anything went wrong, there was people in the store that they could actually talk to. It made things like showing your ID. Otherwise, that's one of the hardest things in electronic banking is how do you ID yourself? And we were able to show by being in the grocery store, we were able to solve that problem because they could ID themselves with a person there. So things like that became easier by being in the grocery store. So we bridged those things where the electronic channels don't really work very well.
So what's the story? What ended up happening with the bank? Does it still exist?
President's Choice Financial still exists today. We then moved down to the U.S. So we expanded down into the U.S. in conjunction. So I became the president of President's Choice Financial. I joined CIBC. That was kind of how I got into banking. So I used to always think of myself as a retailer, but I've actually been in banking since 1998.
You got into banking by starting your own bank. That's incredible.
So we went down and we launched in the U.S. into the dot-com boom. So that would have been around 2000 to 2002. And the U.S. expansion, well, I left before it, but it ended up getting becoming a bit of a victim of the dot-com crash. But I had left by then because that's when I had met Michael in 2002, and he had bought NCB, and he gave me this great checkmate question, which was, he said, what do you think of this bank I just bought? And I said, it looks great. I said, but a bank is a mirror image of the economy. And so in order to make the bank grow, you have to make sure you make the country grow. And he said, can you think of anything better to do with the rest of your life than help a country grow while you create some wealth? And I did not have a good answer to that question. So we went back to Florida, told my wife we were moving back to Canada, or at least asked her if we could move back to Canada, and we did. And I joined Mike, and we came down and started work on NCB July of 2002.
Wow, that's an incredible story. It's an incredible origin story. So yes. I don't remember if you said it because I was reading some of the comments at the same time. Did you sell your stake in the bank?
Oh no! Remember, I worked for Loblaw, so it was a joint venture between two companies. I worked for Galen Weston's Loblaw company, so I was an employee and an executive. So I didn't own the bank. I just started it on behalf of Loblaw and in conjunction with CIBC. Yes.
Got it. Still a pivotal role, though.
Yeah, gave me my hybrid entrepreneurial. I have always had an entrepreneurial instinct, but I've pretty well, for the most part, done it in a in places where I was either part of a company like in Loblaw or in CIBC, or then later on with Michael. It was great because the opportunity, Michael's always looking for entrepreneurial opportunities. So after we got going on the bank, that transitioned to after about a couple of years that we had gone through most of the transition in the early 2000s, and then we saw the opportunity to do more investing and start a private equity fund. So I got to satisfy my entrepreneurial instincts by starting a private equity fund.
What was your first impression of Michael Lee Chin? And then what was your first impression of Jamaica?
Michael is a great human being, just a phenomenal spirit. And I used to tell everybody, so I've worked with Michael since 2002, joined basically on the premise of come work with me. And I said, what would I do? And he said, you'll work with me. And I said, oh, that sounds good. so we've done that for 22 years now. And I used to tell everybody, I said, I have the best boss in the world, because every morning, Michael, we still talk a lot of mornings, will call up and he'll ask me two things. He'll ask me if I've exercised, and he used to ask me if I called my mother. Mm. And I thought there was nothing better that I could think about than to have a coach who asked me those two questions was always fantastic.
And so when you came to Jamaica for the first time, you joined the team 2002, Jamaica was fresh off FinSAC. What did you think? Were you like, oh my God, what did I get myself into?
No, we had a great team that was coming down, and we got to meet a whole lot of great people. We used to stay in New Kingston, so we'd go walk around every morning. I'll tell you a story. We used to walk from around the Pegasus Courtly up by the towers, but over to the atrium. And the interesting thing again about Mike is Michael would, when we got to the grounds, he would always pick up all the trash that was lying around, and eventually you started to get there and the trash was already picked up because people had started to recognize that the garbage litter lying around was actually not a good thing, and the chairman of the bank was willing to pick it up, and so the groundskeeper started to pick it up, and then we started to beautify some of the buildings and the medians and things like that, and then you started to see Knutsford Boulevard and Trafalgar start to get spruced up and cleaned up, and it was a great experience actually seeing that stuff change while we were working on the bank.
So have you lived in Jamaica all these years, or you've been back and forth between Jamaica and Canada?
Back and forth for 22 years.
22, like how often would you come?
I used to pretty well kind of like it is now, every second week.
Okay, well, that's pretty frequent.
Yeah.
And there's a reason I'm asking you all of this, by the way. So mm-hmm. A big part of running a company in any country is being familiar with the culture. And so you're running the biggest bank in Jamaica, and there is a very distinct culture in Jamaica, especially surrounding banking and finance and people's attitudes towards banking. So I wanted to get a sense of how familiar you are with how people operate here.
So I'll tell you, I mentioned about my upbringing, and my father was a British bank, kind of in the British Commonwealth. So there was a cultural part of the upbringing that I would say was very similar, from a values perspective, from a cultural perspective, that was actually made me feel very comfortable in Jamaica. Again, mentioned my best friend. One of my best friends I'd met a Jamaican, and we grew up with a very multicultural group of friends, and again, a very shared value system. Michael and I visited India when we were investing in Infosys, the IT company. And I took him over to meet some of my family, and he felt completely at home there, the same way I'd say I felt very, very comfortable visiting people in Jamaica. So I haven't really found the culture different. I've actually found it very similar. Mm-hmm. We tend to say it's the Canadian, it's that old British, that British Commonwealth experience, as well as the Canadian. Canada's pretty multicultural, and Canada has a very You know, there's a strong Caribbean diaspora in Canada. And so I think from a values perspective, we do, I haven't found it very different at a values level. Obviously at a, I can't dance like Michael.
Can you do push-ups for your age? The number.
I can't do push-ups for my age anymore. I used to keep up with Michael on push-ups. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then the other reason I ask about, you know, how often you come and how familiar you are with the culture is that there's also a perception that, oh gosh, this foreigner is coming in to run our bank, what used to be the national bank.
Yeah, I'm conscious of that, Khalil. I think it's important to be sensitive to that. We were very sensitive to that in 2002 when we bought the bank. And there was a very big focus I worked with the people in cards at the time, and I worked with some of the folks in operations, very much working just directly in the trenches with the folks side by side. We were also very conscious to make sure we did a come back home program. So we brought back Jamaicans who were in Citibank, JP Morgan, different folks, folks like Aubin Hill, and so very sensitive to the idea of not being foreign owned, led, managed. Very, very conscious of that. I think after 22 years, I kind of feel I'm not that foreign. So this time around, I feel a little bit more comfortable with that. At least I don't think I'm people perceive me as a foreigner.
So now that you have the opportunity to lead, what is the number one thing that you want to change or fix at NCB?
If I could wave a magic wand, the number one thing would be the G in EGC. So we...
Governance.
Yes, absolutely. And the whole idea of self-governance and the golden rule, do to others as you'd have them do unto you. And if everyone just took personal responsibility for their own space, the phrase, you know, stay in your own lane, focus on what's within your domain of control, or at least close to it, and do to others as you'd have them do unto you. Don't do to others what you would not have them do unto you. If we did that for customers, we did it for shareholders, we did it for our fellow workers, we did it for the community, we'd automatically have efficiency. We'd automatically have more effectiveness. We'd have less waste everywhere because like I said, the litter, you don't litter your own house. You don't waste energy in your own house. You don't, you try and treat your family well. You just think about all those things you do when you get into your own family. And if you treated the work environment, the business environment the same way, we'd eliminate a lot of waste. And if we eliminate a lot of waste, we become much more efficient, we're able to serve customers better.
So now, and it's interesting that you said governance is the number one thing that you'd want to fix, because I feel like in Jamaica, a lot of people would answer that question by saying customer service, that is one area that they are disappointed in NCB with, especially in recent times. I get the complaints all the time. What's NCB doing about fixed customer service? As a matter of fact, there's a comment right here. Where is it? Let me find it back. Steve says, as someone who's familiar with the Canadian banking system, what is the plan to improve customer service at NCB? Waiting 2 hours in line needs to change.
Yeah, so... So first of all, let me just talk about when I mentioned governance. Think about it in the context of do to others as you'd have them do unto you. So if you applied that to the customer, we don't like to stand in line for 2 hours as a customer. So why would we expect or think it's okay for our customers to stand in line for 2 hours? So that's the root cause, is getting everybody to take that self-governance ownership mindset. And if that could happen, then we would solve efficiency and customer service, which are what our customers experience and our shareholders experience. In terms of the Canadian banking system, so I think when in 2002 when it came in, there was lineups at the branch all the time. But it was to do basic mundane transactions, withdraw money, pay bills, make deposits. And the lineups were pretty well all day, every day. You know, you'd drive up, you'd pass a bank branch and there was always a lineup. So today, most of those lineups are gone because people are doing banking electronically. And most of the time now when people are coming into our branches, it's for customer service. And to a great extent, I'd say it's because something has gone wrong with the you've fallen off the electronic rails. And interestingly, I went into my bank branch up here in Canada. I go into it now almost more regularly now just to watch what other customers do. And interestingly, it's pretty well the same stuff, right? It's somebody's card no longer works. Their card has been blocked. There's been some hacking on it, or there's been, for some reason, it doesn't work. And they need to get back on the electronic rails because they're dependent on it to pay their bills, to do everything. They need their debit card working. They need their credit card working. And so they're at the bank branch trying to get back on the electronic rails. But because you need authentication, you need maybe to check ID and different things, you're in the branch. So very similar, actually, issues in Canada that are experienced. We experience them in greater volume, I think, in Jamaica. And we can put I think for NCB in particular, what we did is we raced down the electronic digital pathway, hoping that it would work 100%, but it doesn't. And so for the, you know, whether it's 1% of the 5% of the time that it doesn't work, when you fall off those rails, we have to make it easier to get back on. If I use another analogy, Kalila, it would be what makes Amazon great is not that Amazon makes it easy to shop. Not that Amazon makes it easy that they get you your product. It's Amazon makes it very easy to return something. They make it very easy to recover from a mistake. And that's what we missed in our digital transformation. We missed the part that says, what happens when somebody's card gets eaten up by the ABM? How do they get a replacement card? And making that process easy, that's the part we missed. And I'd say the Canadian system does that better than we do that in Jamaica.
It's good that you acknowledge that the digital rollout hasn't been perfect. It's been far from perfect, as a matter of fact. There have been complaints about, oh, you're closing all the branches because you want to do the all digital branches. But you come from a background of launching an electronic bank in 1998. So What do you think is the balance for NCB in a country like Jamaica, the electronic banking and, you know, the way the world seems to be going versus what Jamaicans want?
I don't think Jamaicans want anything much different than what the world wants. Everybody wants convenience. Everybody, you know, nobody aspires to say, I'd really like, I get a real thrill out of going and making a deposit or a withdrawal at a
bank. But there's still also a cultural fear of banking here.
Yeah, there's a cultural fear. I think, again, around the world, people aren't thrilled with banks. What I try and say is you think of electric cars. You know, they talk about the future is going to be electric cars, but there's charging station anxiety, there's all these different things. You need the entire infrastructure there, and it still doesn't work perfect. We used to have, maybe not, this may be a difference in Jamaica, but in Canada, we used to have phones where the line never dropped and the call quality was perfect. Today, we have phones where the line quality, you know, calls drop and line quality is not perfect, but we have a lot more connectivity today than we ever did before. And so overall, we're much better off. But if you were to look at it, you'd say our call quality today is not as good as it actually used to be when we were 100% landline. But we're much better off from a telecommunications perspective. So the same way, I'd say we need to just to acknowledge that it doesn't become 100% and it doesn't all work perfectly. So we have to be better at recovering from when the call drops, from the equivalent of that. So like I said, when the card gets eaten up by the ATM, we have to be better to solve that problem. And it's not about eliminating cash. Cash works. Cash is, there's a reason there's a reason people use cash. Cash works very, very well. And the idea that you can eliminate it completely, I think that's like saying we can go to 100% renewable energy, 100% electric cars. That's not going to happen, very quickly or if anytime soon. So cash cash works exceptionally well in a number of circumstances. And I think it's that expectation that we can be 100%. That's what we have to get rid of. But that's the same thing. I'd say here, in Canada, it's in other countries. Cash has a place, at least for quite a while still to come.
What are your views on Jamdex?
Similar way, Kalila. Just think about it. It's got to make life easier. The financial system, I call it the mirror image of the real economy. It exists to enable the real economy. It exists to make the really, and if you can't pay a bill quickly, you slow down the real economy. So when a business can't pay for its goods or collect from its customers, we slow down the real economy because the payment side of it, the financial side of it, slows it down. So the better we can make the financial side of it, the better we make the real economy. Jamdex or any type of digital currency has to be better than cash. If it's not better than cash, then the question is, what's the reason for using it? And so you can probably think of a lot of situations where money remittance is always the very first thing that people go to. Why? Because it's very hard to ship money from one side of the world to the other. But when you can turn that electronic, it makes perfect sense. And so I think when you look at all the applications where e-commerce, where you cannot make that exchange with cash, then digital currencies, whether it be electronic payments or digital currencies, become very, very effective. But you always got to measure it against, it has to be better than the incumbent, and the incumbent is cash.
Would you say Jamdex has been a failure?
No. It's just got to go. So it's got some time. Again, you've got to get a circle going. I'll take my own. So why did we launch President's Choice Financial the way we did? Because we could create a circle. You were going to spend your money in the grocery store, and we were going to make it easy for you to spend your money in the grocery store. And if we could get the other side of that done, which was to get payroll deposit into your account, then we had a perfect cycle, which is money was going automatically into your account. And out the other end, we had made it easy for you to spend where you spent your money. And it was the grocery store. So similarly for Jamdex, I think one of those things of, put government payments, those types of things on Jamdex. And you'll see Jamdex being used very quickly. But if I get paid in a way that looks like cash, and then I have to go and take my cash and turn it into Jamdex, that's an extra step that is difficult for me. So you have to get the whole cycle going, and that's a bit of a chicken and egg, because it's electric cars and charging stations. Nobody wants to put up a charging station network until everybody's got an electric car, and nobody wants to get an electric car until there are charging stations everywhere. So similarly, Jamdex, we've got to get the merchants accepting it, and we have to get employers and benefits payments folks paying with it. And then when people have Jamdex in their wallet, they'll start using it. Merchants will automatically accept it if it was already in their wallet.
So question from Learn, Grow, Invest. Does NCB plan to become a fully digital service provider? I'm gonna add, should you become?
No. This is the big thing about NCB and Guardian, for that matter, in insurance. We have breadth, we have scale. We are not a niche. So the business model of NCB and Guardian is we're everything, and so we have to get good at being very efficient at providing all of those services, and we don't have the, I'd say, the luxury, the option. It's just not good strategy for us to try and become a niche, to say, oh, we're going to be a fully electronic provider, fully digital provider, because we serve everyone, and not everyone is ready to be fully digital. So as long as we're in the customer service business, we cannot dictate to the customer how they should do it. We try and you try and lead and you try and follow the customer at the same time, but you got to stay in that band of lead a little, but make sure you're also following.
How are you dealing with the security issue? So one big difference between Jamaica and Canada, we have, I would venture to say, we have a lot more security issues. You know, all the robberies with beryllium last year, the targeting of the, you know, the transportation of cash being a real big issue that affected the availability of cash and affected people's perception of doing business with you. How are you handling that whole situation?
The physical theft is definitely a difference between Canada and Jamaica, without a doubt, physical theft. But I would suggest to you that it's been a bizarre experience to see bank robberies reappear in North America, that they actually became a thing again last year. It was almost like it was like smallpox or whatever. It'd be an extra, you know, it had been eliminated from the world, and all of a sudden, or measles, and all of a sudden it comes back. There's actually physical bank robberies again. But clearly not at the you know, we don't have the situations like you see with beryllium in Jamaica. So that's you plan for that. You do different things. I think, you know, it's gotten better. You just have to beef up your security and come up with and work with the partners to make it more secure. The electronic side is actually a greater concern. It's not because it's not Jamaica specific. It's another global pandemic, which is the electronic theft and the hacking. And that I use the analogy of the pandemic because I think it just requires us to some extent work the way we did in the pandemic, that we all have to come together and all do our parts. And, you know, it requires the equivalent of the precautions of masking and things like that. And again, it's not the same, but if you follow the parallel, it just requires some protection part, extra vigilance on the part of the customer, extra vigilance on the part of the institutions, and in order to make sure that we keep everyone safe. So we accept our responsibility to keep everyone safe, but we need the cooperation of all the players in the market, including the government, including the police, including the tech providers. It everybody has to pull together because it is a global pandemic, this the online theft.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is in the top two issues regarding NCB. There's the customer service and there's the fraud. And the company, I would say, has taken a major hit to its reputation because of all these reports of fraud, especially in the past 12 months. So how do you address that? And how do you assure the public that you're on it, especially in the context that what I saw a recent news article that you laid off 14 IT personnel?
Okay, so we have a few hundred IT personnel. So 14 IT personnel, they weren't working on fraud. So that would be the first thing I'd say, just because one has nothing to do with the other. What are we doing? We've done a heck of a lot on fraud. But before I even get to that, it's important to recognize as we talk about customer service and we talk about fraud, you can talk about basically anything to do with banking, and NCB's name is always going to come up. The example I use is, oh, you know, our ATMs, you know, it's an NCB ATM, and NCB always has ATM outages. We have 300 ABMs across the country. If 5% of our machines are not working, that's 15 machines. Many of our competitors don't have 15 machines. So odds are you're going to find when you go look for an ABM, you're going to find an NCB ABM. Odds also are if you're going to run into one that doesn't work, it's probably going to be one of ours because we've got the biggest fleet. We serve the most customers. Again, we have our data would show us that we have a lower incidence of fraud than the industry. We have a lower incidence of ABMs not working. That we're like, you know, mostly things, we're better than the industry, but we're so much bigger than most of our competitors, and all the people interact with us. So that's what people see. I don't say that as an excuse. I just say that to make sure that, try and put it into perspective, and say that the bar is higher for us because we do serve all the customers. So we have to make sure that we're better than everyone else, just because everyone's going to see the things when we make a mistake. But with respect to fraud, we did things with alerts. We've done a whole lot of stuff with education. We've adjusted limits. We've done a number of things. So there's actually, if you look at the data, we had a little bit of a spike in the October-ish, October-November time period. And then after that, it came down. And so most number of the things that we did in that time window have worked. But it'll be a we're on it all the time. It's the number one issue, number one priority in the organization. Not because NCB's got a bigger problem. It's the number one issue in the organization because it's a global issue.
And you're absolutely right. The bar is higher for NCB because you are the biggest and the most visible. So you will be the most targeted naturally. So let's get into some numbers. My viewers love to talk numbers on this show, and they've been pressuring me to start asking you about numbers. So Nana then says, let's get to the share price as a shareholder. Why is NCB trading below market value, even with the return of dividends? What's your take?
So I've been investing for portfolio manager for about 20 years now, investing, and I will normally say I don't begin to try and understand the market. I'll try and focus on companies, businesses, and stock prices are, you know, hard to understand the market. But what I would I'd say, and the reason I think it's difficult to understand the market is because it's sentiment driven. And sentiment is not quite the same as looking at the numbers. And so the issue, I think, is that stocks, everything pretty well trades on trust. And so our relationship with our customers is based on trust, whether they trust us or not. All relationships are based on trust. And the relationship with the shareholder is based on trust. And it takes a long time to earn trust. So it took a long time for NCB's share price to go from, it was $1, whatever it was back then in 2002, very, very low, to get to, you know, $10 and then to $30 and back down to about $10 and then, you know, keep going up over $200. But it took a long time for that big spike to happen, to earn that trust that took it over $200. But trust can be lost very, very quickly. So I think we broke the trust when we didn't pay dividends for a quarter, and then we didn't pay dividends for two quarters, and then you don't pay dividends for three quarters, and then all of a sudden you haven't done it for over 2 years. You've broken a trust, and we have to earn that trust back. And I can't tell you exactly how long, but I don't think it's just, hey, two quarters of dividends makes the difference. I think we have to keep on delivering on what we've been doing, which is get the self-governance going, improve customer service. There was no noise over Christmas at ABMs. That was a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that there was no noise, that the ABMs were good through Christmas. A big focus on our part just to make sure there was no noise, not because we got accolades, but that would restore trust. So I'm trying to make people aware then, says, hey, did you notice there was no noise through Christmas time? We made sure that there was cash in the machines. We made sure that things worked. We have to keep doing that. We'll earn the trust back of our customers, earn the trust back of our shareholders. The fundamentals are good, but it takes a little while to earn the trust back.
Robert, and it absolutely will. So clearly it's not just a dividend issue and not just a right no and a quick fix. But Robert wants to know what's going on with the APO.
What's going on with the APO? So we announced that we have a number of things we want to do. So we got permission, we got the consent of our shareholders to do an APO and issue shares. But it's all part of a strategy of optimizing capital within the business. It's one of the big things we have to do is make sure our capital is used well. The power of a group like MCB is we have all the breadth of services across the bank and insurance and capital markets and wealth management. We have it across all these geographies. And so we have the ability to bring the best solutions to bear to customers throughout the region. The problem is we've got a bunch of complexity that says they're in different countries with different regulators, in different companies with minority shareholders, all these different things. And that means that we don't actually end up moving stuff around as well as we need to make sure that we optimize, that we can bring the full power of the group to the customer, we can bring the full power of the group for the benefit of shareholders. So a long way of saying that we need to optimize capital within the group. We embarked on three main strategies, which was to free up excess capital where it's trapped within the business in different parts of the business so that we could make better use of it. First of all, we cut costs. That was the first thing, to make sure we generated more capital. Second thing was free up capital where it's trapped in different parts of the business. Third, look to sell off assets that are not core to our business, not core to our strategy. And we announced the sale of NCB Cayman. And then fourth is issue shares so that we could raise capital and put it to better use and put it to good use, which would include reducing debt as well as investing in growth. So the APO, so I put all that because we have these multiple strategies. And we expect to do an APO. We expect to raise capital, but it'll be when we feel the timing is right. It'll be at a size that is right and not in a way that dilutes our existing shareholders inappropriately. We want to make sure that it's accretive to our shareholders. It's creating value, not destroying value. So far, we're working through the four different paths: cut costs, make more money, sell some assets, free up capital where it's trapped in the business, and go to the market to raise some capital. It's not the only strategy. It's one of a number, and we'll do it when the timing is right.
Any idea of when that might be this year?
We'll just keep monitoring it. So we wanted to get the permission. So obviously the fact that we got the consent would indicate that it's sooner rather than later. But in terms of the precise time, I think we'll just keep monitoring. The prior question that was raised was, you know, about the share price. So like I said, you're trying to gauge trust, gauge our needs, gauge the opportunities in the market, and gauge the trust factor and the share price, and so we make sure that it's value accretive to our shareholders.
Okay. Well, I wish you all the best with your journey ahead with NCB. It is a tough task that you have accepted, given the time that we are in right now.
You know, Khalila, in life, we believe, as part of our business philosophy, we say that we're here to add value. The whole goal is to add value, and you can only add value by going into a situation where there are some problems and they need to be fixed and improved. And in that process, you create a lot of value. If you start off with perfection, there's no value to create. So this is kind of par for the course for me and for the and in fact our Mr. Li Qin and our group. It's a big part of the philosophy is you add value when you can take something from inefficient to efficient, and that's what we're this is a great opportunity for us to do that.
Well, I look forward to great things from NCB. Robert, all the best to you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Khalila.
All right, good. So viewers, it is time now for tonight's poll question. I feel like I should have asked something about NCB, but actually it is about Express Catering's bond offer. Are you interested? It closes on March 8th, I believe. So you have about a week and change. There's the 27th, about a week and couple days before it is scheduled to close, but it's already oversubscribed. You've heard about it on this program. You've heard about it on The Bottom Line. You may have seen ads and stuff. So are you interested in Express Catering's bond offer? Yes, I need to invest. Yes, I invested already. No, it's not for me, or I haven't decided yet. Or you can also just leave a comment. Let me know in the chat. Let me know in the comments. And you can take our poll on Twitter or on the community tab of my YouTube channel. And like I said, you can also leave your comments down there in the chat. I think I see some comments coming in already. Patricia says, I bought some ECL already. Awesome. All right. So yesterday in the Money Mission community, we spoke about stock market, trading, investing, and more. I hosted Investing for Beginners live for the very first time. Here's a short clip of what you may have missed if you weren't there. When people say they're trading, what do they mean? All it means is that they are buying and selling shares on a stock market or a stock exchange. And the reason I love the concept of a stock market or the name stock market is because I want you to think about a real market. Think about Coronation Market or any market that you've ever been to. What happens at a market? That's the place you got to buy and sell. So you have people there who go there to buy. You have people who go there to sell. Because if you have a buyer, in order to buy something, there has to be a seller, right? You can't buy something that doesn't exist. Somebody has to be selling an item in order for you to buy. And that is called trading. That's called trade. And that is a stock market. So exactly the same concept as a regular market, just substitute the goods with stocks, with ownership in companies. So people are buying and selling their ownership stake in companies. If you ever get confused about the concept, just think back to a regular market and just label your Dasheen, NCB, label your Coco, Scotiabank, label your, what else they sell, Kalalu. Just think of that as Wisinko. Think of your Irish potato as Steprod and various other companies that come to mind. Right. So when I say investing for beginners, So sometimes you see some questions in the chat that seem basic, but listen, there are so many people, and you might be one of them right now, who pretend to know what we're talking about, but you don't really know. And you're just going to smile and nod and continue pretending to know. You don't have to feel embarrassed to ask your questions at Investing for Beginners. I break it down. Simple, simple, simple. What are stocks? What is a stock market? What is an IPO? What is an APO? What is a rights issue? What is a bond? All of these things we went through. And we also looked at what is the current investing environment? What is your specific investment profile? What are the things? What are your goals? So we looked at setting your specific goals, your specific timelines. What is your risk tolerance? We went into all of that. How do you choose a stock? What are the things that cause stock prices to go up and down? That's what Investing for Beginners is all about. Go to Money Mission GA to sign up for that course. The live class was last night, but you can always watch the replay, and all the resources are available at moneymissionja.com. So reminding you right now to hit the like button. Up next, we've got your market recap, and the analysts are standing by. Hey, moneymakers, join the KRM fam with our official merch. Get it now at KalilaReynolds.com. Let's get this money.
The JSE Combined Index lost over 3,000 points or 1% last week. 123 stocks traded across the main and junior markets for the week ending Friday, February 23, 2024. 54 made gains, 61 lost value, and 8 stayed the same. 200 million shares changed hands on the Jamaican dollar market, valued at $890 million. Wigton was last week's most traded stock. It took up 32% of market volume, with 64 million shares trading. The stock gained 22 cents to open the new week at $1.15. The stock was also last week's biggest gain, up almost 24%. Trans-Jamaican traded at the second highest. The stock gained 8 cents to open Monday at $3.24. And Derriman Trading rounded out last week's most traded, with 22 million shares changing hands. The stock lost 16 cents to open Monday at $1.90. Now let's see who had the biggest gains for the week. AMG Paper and Packaging was the market's second biggest gainer behind Wigton. The stock was up 22% to open Monday at $3.66. And JMMB Group 5.75% FRUSDCR preference shares was up 21% to close the week at $1.91 US. On the losing side now, KLE Group was the week's biggest loser. The stock lost 20% open Monday at $1.91. Sterling Investments USD lost almost 15%, opening the new week at 1 cent US. And Iron Rock Insurance lost 14% to close the week at $2.15. Over on the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange, the composite index gained 11 points or 1% last week. Massey Holdings was the most traded stock. The stock gained 5 cents to open Monday at $4.30 TT. Port Lissas Industrial Port Development was the biggest gain of the week. The stock was up almost 8% to start the week at $3.99 TT. And on the losing side, Cinema One fell 6% to open Monday at $6.45 TT. Over in the US, the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 were up 1% last week, while the Nasdaq gained 0.5%. Over at the pumps, motorists scored a small win last week, with gas prices losing 33 cents. The price of regular diesel fell 60 cents and low sulfur diesel fell 25 cents. In foreign exchange, it took an average $157.02 Jamaican to purchase $1 last Friday. That's 50 cents less than the week before. Meanwhile, it took an average $116.60 Jamaican to purchase $1 Canadian. One British pound cost on average $199.28 Jamaican. And you could buy €1 for $172.24 Jamaican on average. Finally, on the crypto markets, Bitcoin prices fell about 1% over the past 5 days, trading at $51,498 US on Monday, while Ethereum prices were relatively stable, trading at $3,103 US on Monday.
Disclaimer: this is not intended as financial advice. Please consult a licensed financial advisor before making investment decisions.
Welcome back. It's time now for the analysts. I'm joined by business writer at the Jamaica Observer, David Rose. Welcome back, David.
Hey, Kalila. It's just me on tonight?
Yeah, just you and I tonight. Just you and me. Just us. So back tonight to we're talking... Yeah, well, we had a nice, solid discussion with Robert Almeida just now, so I don't mind. So tonight we're talking about remittances, which fell by $10 billion in 2023. And for our viewers, let me just give you some context. Remittances make up a large chunk of Jamaica's GDP. So the money that those of you abroad watching right now, the money that you send back home, is very important to Jamaica's entire economy. So seeing it fall by $10 billion, David, how significant is that and what caused it?
So to put things into context, Kalila, when you say $10 billion, that's Jamaican dollars. So for the viewers who don't know, the Bank of Jamaica publishes the remittance data on a monthly basis. And they recently published their 2023 summary of the remittance market. And what you would have seen was a $70 million decline in the total remittance inflows into the country. So whereas in 2022, there would have been $3.44 billion, this year we only had about $3.37 billion coming in as remittances. And that decline can easily be attributed to, you know, just persons don't have as much to send down, you know? Because when you check it out, Kalila, 2019 remittances would have just been at around 2.4 $2.4 billion US. So we effectively grown that amount around 40-45% since 2019, which is influenced by inflation, but remittances is still a bit this robust. It does speak volumes, because what it does is that it actually gives credence to other potential players to enter the market. So what do I mean by that? And let me just go back to the beginning for persons who understand. Remittances in normal circumstances is really the funds that friends, relatives, whoever sends home to, you know, like a Western Union, a MoneyGram, a Remitly, Boss Revolution. Like those are some of the examples. Some persons, you know, will go to a physical outlet to collect their cash in Jamaican dollars. Some persons will collect it straight to the bank account, but that's what remittance in a simple sense is. And what we have seen last year, or in the last 2 years, is we have seen TFOB 2021 Limited, which is the operators of Link, join the free, you know, to become a primary agent, meaning that they can have sub-agents, in a sense, to process remittances across the country, but they're really digital. And then we also saw Supreme Ventures in a remittance subsidiary, I believe it's SPL FinTech, get approved last year by the BOJ for a primary agent license. So right now there are 9 primary agents, you know, still dominated by Western Union under Grayscale, the Money Services Limited. But the fact that you're seeing more players enter the space, and the context of 2019 around $2.41 billion versus $3.37 billion this year, and only seeing a 2% decline in total inflows. So although it's $10 billion Jamaican dollars reduction or $70 million, you're talking about only a 2% decline relative to over an over $3.44 billion, you know, inflow by 2023. So all this is saying is that persons can probably have a little bit hard in Jamaica. I mean, everything that's going on, and you potentially might have the case whereby some persons are earning more overseas from the US and have the money sent to Jamaica. So all of this just speaks great, you know, for, you know, like a Lasco Financial Services, Alliance on a Sagicware Group, Western Union under Grace Kennedy. You know, on one hand, or decline, 2% decline would have been an outlier compared to the other Latin American markets like your Guatemala, your Mexico, and El Salvador, which we should have seen, you know, remittances grow 7-9%.
Right. So that's what I was wondering, because I looked at the report and I said, well, this is strange, because if it is that people just are doing worse off in general over in the UK and the US, how come remittances to other Latin American countries increased? But Jamaica,
those guys work, Kanila. Those guys work. Like, remittances make up a significant inflow for, you know, Mexico and other countries. And
well, Jamaica too, it rivals the income from tourism.
No, I agree. But the reality is it's a lot harder for some persons as well. As much as, you know, you could say, hey, grandma, auntie, I need some help, they also need help for themselves. And we shouldn't forget that, you know, there are different dynamics happening in the background as well, because El Salvador, you know, as President Nayib Bukele would describe, is the safest country in the Western Hemisphere. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of persons return and carrying wealth back to the country. So that's also a factor that we should consider when it comes down to El Salvador in particular.
That is so interesting, because, what, 5 years ago, El Salvador was one of the most violent countries in the world.
Kalila, in 2016, they had
crazy
probably...
to see what they did with crime.
They probably had 88 or 100 murders per 100,000 citizens in their country. The highest murder rate in the world.
Higher than Jamaica, guys. Much higher than Jamaica.
They're actually the lowest now in the entire Western Hemisphere, like about 2.8 or 3 persons per 100,000 citizens getting murdered now.
And if you're wondering how they do it, if the viewers are wondering how they did it, they basically rounded up all the alleged, anybody they suspected was a gang member, they rounded them all up and put them in jail. All of them.
Well, it worked. People are happy. And the thing is, even PriceSmart, you know, they opened just, you know, one location in Jamaica, which should have been Portmore, right? Which should have come about, what, 20 years post the first opening in Jamaica, El Salvador only had 2 primary locations, you know, before Bukele stepped in. And they're opening, they opened 1 location last September, and they opened another one this month, actually, in Santa Ana, El Salvador. So the fact that you're even seeing Pressmart willing to double their footprint in El Salvador does speak volumes. And amazing. I believe even...
But if we try that here in Jamaica, they're going to say rights, human rights. It became a crime to be a member of a gang. And if they suspected
you... You couldn't wear tattoos on your face? Your tattoos on your face, like, or your body, the gang tattoos? Yeah.
So if you were in the gang and you quit, but you still had the tattoos... Jail.
Yes, salt.
And you but know what would happen here if they tried that in Jamaica, right? All the human
rights. But basically, like, El Salvador's Jamaica is a little bit different. In the case of Mexico, you know, they're always pushing their ground. And I would still probably need to go back and look at the dynamics of their market. Because it's a bit more appreciation as to, you know, what the ability that further surge your remittances to that market. Because I pointed out El Salvador has a different economic makeup occurring under new leadership, and you know, Mexico is one of the highest remittance inflow markets in the world. I doubt if a statistic on my hand right now, so I won't say they're the largest, but they are one of the largest in the world. So you have your Indonesia / Malaysia, you have your Mexico, you have probably like Egypt. These, you know, diaspora communities really support their families back home. So we should not, you know, neglect the value remittances, and also where intermediaries like SVL, TFOB, Alliance, Alaska, you know, come in to somewhat bridge that gap or make some income off of it, because we've even seen where, you know, GK, or Grace Kennedy, you know, introduced their GK1 mobile app and Visa debit card. You would have seen Jimmy Money Transfer promoting the launch of its prepaid Visa debit card. So, you know, and Alaska Financial would have launched a Alaska Gold card. So with all of this remittance inflows, in a sense, even with that relative decline last year, you're still seeing remittances more digital. Still a far away from the real situation of the population, but you're still seeing more and more companies move towards that digitization of remittances and trying to connect or tap into that commerce space that doesn't exist. Because when you transact with cash, there are no fees. You transact with a card, there's a minor fee, even if small, it does add up.
So D has a point. D says, is it possible we just may not be as dependent on overseas relatives for money? Higher rate of employment?
Boy, that is one suggestion, but the reality is it's still tough for other people. We shouldn't forget that, you know, we would have seen the cost of transportation go up around late October last year. We would have seen, well, minimum wage have gone up, which have been good for some people. With other persons, you know, still pretty tough.
Same thing, same point being made.
Yeah, but
that's an interesting take, though.
Well, the reality in the day is Jamaica having relative full employment. And no country will ever have total, you know, unemployment going to zero, because persons are always changing roles or jobs, and it's a state of play. But realistically speaking, Jamaica does have, you know, a low unemployment rate. You know, not sure to an extent, you know, how the microeconomics on the ground are, but at the end of the day, remittance figures does speak, you know, a lot of volumes about the support that's coming into the economy. And on the other hand, it's also an indicative signal of persons seeking to send funds back to Jamaica to build or, you know, grow on different things that they want to do, probably investments, real estate, or so on. So that's just one arbitrary example.
Very interesting. A lot of other interesting things happened this week. So we had local government elections yesterday. All now we don't know who win.
Hey, both of them claim Nikalila. Think of Donald Trump. They both won. That is what matters. They both won. Jamaica won. We all won.
Why you say they both won?
They both claim victory. Hey, they both came victory. I'm not going to be the guy who tries to check the fact check them. I'm just going to go with what they say. They both won.
No, well, I ask you why you said that, because there is a perception that, well, yes, they've both claimed victory, but regardless of who won, well, we had one, we had a fairly peaceful election. And then two, PNP definitely gaining ground. So even if they didn't win overall, when the final tally is counted, they've gained ground. And so there's that to consider. What direction is the country going in? Because usually we use local government as a litmus test towards general elections. But I don't know how deep you are into the politics. I used to be deep into politics. And I was at
You were in news. You had to cover it. No, someone pointed it out that, you know, you're not likely going to see national overall elections being kept until probably close to September 2025, which is when you're constitutionally due. And at the same time, it was an interesting, you know, a moment, because while it would have been relatively lower than 2016 local government election on a percentage basis, you still saw the fact that a lot of these divisions were decided on literally 100 votes, 20, 50 votes. So vote apathy is very real, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, these slim margins do show that it's going to be a very tight and tough, you know, battle come next year when the national elections are actually held. And that's going to be interesting, because if you've actually followed, for example, a Cemex or one of these publicly listed US companies, they actually list the transition or changing governments as part of their risks or events that occurred in the year. So a lot of companies are going to be watching, you know, not just locally, but internationally, going to be watching, you know, what happened here in the local government elections, and, you know, making predictions and potential measures based on what they expect for 2025. So we shouldn't neglect the reality that politics plays, because at the end of the day, either way, or whoever wins the government control, we still as citizens have to really deal with the reality of the governance that does come out of those situations.
I see a couple other theories in the chat about the reason for remittances dipping. Lanezra says maybe a lot more Latin Americans crossing Mexico border and sending money back. Philip says perhaps more Jamaicans are traveling with their money because there's more interest by diasporans in investing in Jamaica.
Phil actually has a very good point, because I recall Grace Kennedy, and I think it was really Grace Kennedy, to be honest, and I think Western Union MoneyGram's reports highlighted that when COVID happened, what would have occurred would have been a situation where, because persons couldn't carry the physical cash down with them on their trips, they had to use these different channels, which would have been remittance agencies, to send money back home. So, you know, the remittance companies have benefited tremendously from, you know, those scenarios. But in the grand scheme of things, I'm not sure if $70 million really came through everybody's pockets at the airport. Like, that's a lot of money. But it's a very relevant point, though, still. Because if that money is being carried directly in pocket, you know, as cash, that won't necessarily be captured as easily on the remittance data. So that actually is a very valid point.
All right. Well, thank you so much this evening, David. Something for us to consider.
You're welcome, Galila. Let us see how tomorrow goes by. Tomorrow, Thursday, because that's when most public companies in the JSCs or their financials are going to be due. So Thursday is going to be a melee of reports. Your Grace Kennedy, your JSC, your Pan-Jamaica Surgical Group. Just look out for fast and fierce reports come Thursday, people.
All right. Going to keep an eye out. Thanks for the heads up, David. Always appreciated. We will take our final break and come back with your comments.
I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be violet sky, I could be hurtful, I could be purple, I could be anything you like. I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be violet sky, I could be hurtful, I could be purple, I could be anything you like. I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be violet sky, I could be hurtful, I could be purple, I could be anything you like. I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be violet sky, I could be hurtful, I could be purple, I could be anything you like. I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be violet sky, I could be hurtful, I could be purple, I could be anything you like.
Welcome back. Okay, let's see what your comments are. And I have a lot of comments tonight. So Javon says, the goal for everyone should be ownership. That's where the real wealth is accumulated. In ownership, though, one should focus on assets and not liabilities. Can't emphasize that enough. As exactly my key message last night at Investing for Beginners, key to wealth is ownership. Ownership of assets that appreciate in value over time. Dr. Lithium says, that's rich. Speaking about Robert Almeida helping to found a bank back in 1998 in Canada. Learn, Grow, Invest says, great story. Always good when CEOs have entrepreneur experience. Shelly Ann says, he's calling all the big names in Canada. He is seasoned more than jerk chicken. I love it. Dr. Lithium again says, Jamdex is awesome. People are sleeping on that tech. The implementation, though. Implementation is where the problem is. Patricia says, it's refreshing to hear him take accountability. Learn, Grow, Invest says, trust equals a higher stock price. Facts. Devon says, lots of good things are happening in the market, guys. Continue investing wisely. And he points out that RPL is opening a new station soon. But he also says, the market needs a good IPO. Guess what? There should be one coming up in about April. I do know of a company I've heard through the grapevine that there is a company planning an IPO, and they're at an advanced stage with it, and they're targeting possibly sometime in April. So let's see when that one drops. Of course, I can't tell you who it is for purposes, you know. D says, the close results make things so much more interesting. And to Learn, Grow, Invest, telling people that some of the questions about the share price, Robert Almeida did answer in their interview, because they also interviewed him on Saturday. So go check out their interview with him on YouTube as well. Type in Learn, Grow, Invest, subscribe to their channel, take a view of that interview with Robert Almeida if you want more details about that side of it. Because I really wanted to get into character. Who is this guy who's now going to be running our largest bank? And what are his priorities for NCB going forward? And I hope that where we're able to do that for you. I think it went well. I know some people were complaining that we didn't get as much into the numbers as we usually did, but I thought it was important to establish who is Robert Almeida. And I hope that you appreciated that. I saw a comment on Instagram. Where is it? Please bring up the comment from Instagram. So it was Sets the Stage Event Decor 876 who said, thank you for the line of questioning as we are now a bit more relaxed in the choice of new leadership of NCB. So that was exactly the purpose. That's where I really wanted to take it, since it's basically, for most of us, our first introduction to who this person is, not somebody very well known on the local scene, even though he's been behind the scenes for a good 20 years. So that's it for this week's show. Make sure that you like the video, subscribe to the channel, share with a friend, subscribe to the newsletter at kalilareynolds.com/newsletter. We do have a new episode of The Property Source coming out on Thursday. Episode 2 is all about hidden NHT gems. So stuff that you didn't know NHT offers, coming up in The Property Source on Thursday. Last week, Friday, we also published a video from the company's office about new changes that affect business ownership. So if you own a business in Jamaica, absolutely you want to watch that video. Also, turn on your post notifications so that you can see the first, that you can be the first to see everything when it drops. We want to help people learn more about money so we can all get this money together. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Kalila Ray. And remember, that's my only account. I don't have any backup accounts. So please report the scammers and the impersonators whenever you see them. If you want to connect with the analysts this week, check the description box below for their contact information. You can also visit the website, KalilaReynolds.com, for financial information you can use however you like it. You can watch, you can listen to the podcast, you can read the articles. Now, what should you do? Tell a friend about taking stock, because investing is the new sexy. So let's make it cool to talk about money. I'm Kalila Reynolds. Thanks for watching.
Let's get this money.